2013 meeting of the Chicago State University Board of Trustees is hereby called to order. Ms. Muscadin, will you please call the roll?
Trustee Joyce?
Here.
Trustee Leek?
Present.
Trustee Smith?
Here.
Trustee Young?
Here.
Trustee Sanchez?
Here.
A quorum exists for business of the board to begin. Ms. Muscadin, will you certify that the notice for this meeting has been given pursuant to the requirements of the Open Meetings Act?
Yes, Mr. Chairman. The meeting notice has been met. Notices were posted 48 hours before the meeting in the Cook Administration Building, Student Union, and the Academic Library Building.
Are there any comments or corrections in the minutes from the May 17, 2013 board meeting? If there are no comments or corrections, do we have a motion to approve the minutes?
Approval.
Second.
It's been moved and seconded to approve the minutes. Would you call the roll, please?
Trustee Joyce?
Yes.
Trustee Leek?
Yes.
Trustee Smith?
Yes.
Trustee Young?
Yes.
Trustee Sanchez?
Yes.
The President's report.
Sir, I request the President does not have a report today.
Good. I guess that's good news. No news is good news. Okay, the Academic and Student Affairs report, Trustee Joyce.
There are two resolutions we will be addressing. We'll be addressing the trauma resolution and the textbook and learning materials program. Is there any presentation we would like to hear about the trauma resolution?
Yes, sir.
Maybe a...
Make it short and sweet?
Well, a brief explanation of what the word trauma. I'm sure people are wondering what we're doing here at trauma.
I do have... for the record, this, I am Yvonne Harris, Associate Vice President of Sponsored Programs. I do have here the PI of that program, Dr. Rashid. Dr. Rashid? Who's available to give further explanation on the program and to answer any questions that you may have.
The evidence-based trauma program is a program that we have with the Department of Children and Family Services, where we have staff who provide statewide training to the child welfare workers within DCFS around family-centered trauma, trauma-informed practice. Recognizing the fact that many of the children who are in the DCFS system have suffered trauma based upon child abuse, based upon incest, et cetera. And this program is to train the child welfare workers to become sensitive to those issues of trauma and the impact it has on the children in placement. Again, this has been in place for since 2008, and we enter our sixth year of this program. We also are involved in developing a nationwide model on trauma-informed practice for child welfare workers, and also taking this model and also training educational personnel, law enforcement personnel, people in the juvenile justice system. So that's kind of the nature of this particular program. It's been with DCFS since 2008, and we have a total of about 26 staff statewide in this particular initiative.
Thank you. Are there any questions or comments from trustees?
I have a question. So, Doctor, who does the training?
We have hired professional social workers and counselors who are doing the training. So they're part of a staff that we have located in one of the DCFS offices here in Chicago, but also offices downstate. So these are not faculty, these are trainers that we've hired.
Mm-hmm. Is this the first year of the grant?
No, sir. This is the sixth year of the grant.
Okay.
We began in 2008.
Have that been, what is the end of it? In other words, what is an evidence-based trauma practice? So have there been interim reports about the success or at least the results of these interventions?
Yes, sir, there have been. We provide annual reports to DCFS, to the feds as well. There's some federal involvement in this as well, and to our grants office here. So we do provide annual, we're required to provide annual reports in terms of the metrics around the outcomes.
Love to get a copy of one.
Yes, sir.
Thank you.
No other comments from trustees? Do I hear a motion to approve the trauma resolution?
So moved.
Second?
I second it.
Roll call, please.
Trustee Joyce?
Yes.
Trustee Leak?
Aye.
Trustee Smith?
Yes.
Trustee Young?
Yes.
Trustee Sanchez?
Yes.
Thank you, Doctor.
The second resolution is the textbook and learning materials program. Just to give you a little history on that program, back in 2002, the United Nations published a report on the education status of Africa. They looked at several countries. And based on that report, they noted that the sub-Saharan countries showed 47% of their children through K through 12 were not in school, and they were not in school for a variety of reasons. So the Bush administration in 2002 set aside $400 million to establish the textbooks and learning materials program. They were mandated to produce reading materials in English, translated from the various African dialects, to train teachers, to recruit new teachers, and to build new pedagogy with respect to teaching. Their initial partnership was with the National South African Ministry of Education. And as a result of that, there was a consortium of six universities that were brought together in order to move that program forward and to build capacity for that initiative. In 2008, the consortiums were funded for that $400 million in order to focus on the sub-Saharan countries. Each member in the collaborative partnered with a particular African country. The University of Texas in San Antonio? Okay. In San Antonio, partnered with South Africa. Elizabeth City University partnered with Senegal. Alabama A&M partnered with Ethiopia. Chicago State University partnered with Ghana. Mississippi Consortium partnered with Zambia. North Carolina State partnered with Tanzania. That program has been running since 2008. This is the last year of the program, and Chicago State University was the only one funded to finish out this phase of the program. So we are asking the board to accept funds with respect to $4,438 million in order to finish out this final year of the program. The program for this grant fund year began in January 1, 2013, and will end in March 31, 2014. The Chicago State University has been exemplary in the program that they have moved forward, and they are looking to restore that consortium and move forward to the next phase, which is bringing education and technology together in those countries, and we're hoping that that's the next funding cycle that we'll be looking at.
And we're dealing, Chicago State's dealing specifically with Ghana.
Specifically with Ghana.
Okay. Any other comments or questions from?
So it mentioned South Africa in our synopsis. Was that just a...
That was the initial from 2002 to 2008. We worked with the National South African Ministry of Education. So that was the start site. Okay. We built that out to the other countries.
I would like to commend Dr. Harris. About 3 years ago, this program was a great challenge. Mm-hmm. It was a challenge for the USAID. It was a challenge for the auditors. And it was a very challenging program. This program now is exemplary. The audit findings have been turned around on this. The challenges have been addressed.
That's right.
And it is now something that, as evidenced, we are the only university out of six that was funded this last year. It shows, so Dr. Harris, I really commend you on this one.
Thank you.
Thank you very much for the work that you've done and working with us on this.
I have a question, a couple questions. So I'm trying to understand, so did we develop the materials that we translated? Do we administer the educational tools, or are we just simply providing our resources?
We provide the resources, we see to the printing, we see to storage of the printed materials. We're responsible for training the teachers. We're responsible for bringing our expertise over to Ghana.
That's my question. So are we sending students and faculty to Ghana, to Accra, to actually participate in these programs?
Yes.
We have students and faculty there right now.
Yes, we do.
And our faculty, up until last year, I think it was last year, the program was an independent unit within the university. Last year, we made the decision to put it underneath the College of Education because we wanted to have our faculty have a more direct input and ensure that the curricula was appropriate. Mm-hmm. We had identified previous years where the curricula was not something that we were proud of. So within the last year and a half, we put it under the College of Education. Dean Gist, along with a number of faculty members, became much more involved and engaging. And then along with Dr. Harris, some very substantive changes and qualitative changes were made in the last year and a half.
Okay. Yeah, my concern is because, you know, oftentimes these programs, whether it's USAID or whatever, they start, but they don't continue. One of the most devastating effects of these programs is that you're there for a season, you're there for a period of time, and it's very beneficial, but then they withdraw. So, you know, somebody should be looking at, whether it's USAID along with these institutions, you know, the continuation of these programs, the empowerment of the people there. Otherwise, it's like you have something, you lose it. That's why I was concerned about, you know.
Right, now it has been there. Institutionalized.
It has been.
Yes, it has been. And so this was going into the next phase. The partnership will just not be with the universities here. The consortium will include all the education entities in each of these countries.
Okay.
And we will continue to be working with Ghana. The next challenge, it will be the technology, because they do not currently have the infrastructure that we have to support the kind of technology they want to bring there. So that is the next challenge they're looking at for the next 10 years.
I'd love to get those reports too. I spent a lot of time in Africa.
Be more than happy to supply those to you.
All right.
Thank you, Dr. Harris. Do I hear a motion to approve?
So moved.
Second.
Thank you.
Thank you, Dr. Harris. Roll call, please. Roll.
Joyce?
Yes.
Trustee Joyce? Trustee Leek?
Yes.
Trustee Smith?
Yes.
Trustee Young?
Yes.
Trustee Sanchez?
Yes.
Okay, resolution is approved.
We're ready for the finance and audit report. Trustee Curtin is not present today, so. Mr.
Mm.
Morning.
Mr. President, trustees. For the record, my name is Larry Pinkleton, Interim Vice President, Administration and Finance. First, I'd like to give a brief update on a couple of things that have transpired since we last met. In our last report, we reported out that the university had made a decision to change dining vendors. I'm happy to report that that process is in the process of being completely implemented. A couple of days ago, actually the latter part of last week, the university did sign an interim letter of agreement with Sodexo Foods, and they will be beginning offering service on this coming Monday, July 1st. I'd also like to provide a brief update on the university's cash position. If I could draw your attention to either screen to your right or left, whichever is most accessible to you. The university's current cash balance is approximately $17.1 million. We have restricted cash totaling $6.3 million, which leaves us a net unrestricted cash amount of $10,800,000 approximately. Based on our receivables that we are projecting for the next 90 days, we've got a $47.9 million number, which we're estimating. Projected expenditures over that same time period are approximately $43.5 million. And this suggests that our projected our balance, if we factor in the amount of cash that we anticipate receiving over this time period, put it up against the cash outlay, suggests that we'll have a $15.3 million balance. Assuming we did not get any state reimbursement over the same time period, the university would still have sufficient cash to meet its obligations in the next 90 days with a balance of approximately $8.5 million. In terms of the current status on our state appropriation, for the fiscal year 13, our balance was $37.1 million. State appropriations payments that have been received year to date, this has been updated just as a couple of days ago, totals approximately $25.7 million, which represents 69% of our state appropriation that we've received. This actually puts us in a fairly strong position relative to historic cash flows. The balance due from the state translates into $11.4 million, which is the difference at 31%. And we also have, in fact, billed the state for 93% of the state appropriation to date. Over the next several days, I would imagine we'll be closing the gap there, and we'll be looking to bill the state for the residual amount. Are there any questions on our cash position? Okay. I'd like to briefly turn our attention to a set of resolutions. The first resolution I'd like to get the Board of Trustees approval for is to establish a equipment and replacement reserve. The legislative audit guidelines provide that the university needs to make provision for a reserve if they intend to maintain a level of consistency in their non-appropriated accounts. At the end of the year, we make an assessment if there is any excess reserves in the non-appropriated accounts, and if there is, in fact, an excess reserve, based on the Legislative Audit Commission guidelines, we are compelled to make a sweep or a transition of dollars from the non-appropriated to the local income account. And so this resolution is intended to give the university sufficient flexibility to navigate through the prospect of excess reserves, ensuring that some of the non-appropriate entities like parking have adequate dollars at their disposal to accommodate upcoming renovations and refurbishments that are planned for the fiscal year 14 time period.
So, you use parking as an example, and now parking generates income, correct?
That's correct.
So are we taking, I'm not clear as to exactly what the money, you know, where the money is coming from and where are we putting it.
Okay, so parking is a revenue generating auxiliary operation.
Yes.
Okay, this resolution is intended to ensure that parking maintains access to the monies that they've generated. The Legislative Audit Commission guidelines on an annual basis require us to sweep any excess funds in the non-appropriated accounts, parking being an example, to the university's local income account, which is basically just the account that is the other half of our revenue stream, so to speak. That basically prohibits an auxiliary operation from having access to that account. Okay, so this university still has the funds, so it goes into a broader university pot. but the auxiliary operation, in this case, in my example, parking, does not have specific access to the funds that they've generated. Okay, so if there's $1 million balance today, as an example, in the parking fund, and we know that there are upcoming renovations planned for parking, what this resolution does is allows us to set that money aside, in essence, continue to allow parking to have the flexibility to access the funds that they generated for their benefit.
All right.
Okay?
Yes.
Any other questions on this resolution? Farrah, should I just review all five together? Do you want to do one at a time?
Chairman?
Let's do one at a time. I move we accept the resolution.
Is there a second? Second.
Trustee Joyce?
Yes.
Trustee Leak?
Yes.
Trustee Smith?
Yes.
Trustee Young?
Yes.
Trustee Sanchez?
Yes.
Move on to the next resolution.
Okay, the next resolution I'd like to discuss is the UPass card. The university does provide a MetroCard that can be used for the student's benefit based on a contractual relationship that's been established to give the students the opportunity to ride to CTA on a daily basis. This is an agreement that was established years ago, and this resolution is basically being brought forth to allow the CTA to exercise their contractual right to have an increase in the fee that's charged to the student. The way the resolution and the service is actually provided, the student, as a result of mandatory fees that are charged to the university, charged to the student, they have the right, the opportunity, if you will, to utilize the CTA pass. This does not suggest that they have to ride the bus, but they have the opportunity to get a CTA pass. For those students who decide that they do not want to participate in this program, we do give them the opportunity to receive a parking credit. So although it's a mandatory fee in a traditional sense, for those students who are not bus riders, there is a university policy in place that provides an offset against their parking expense. The fee is currently anticipated to increase to $140 per semester.
Any questions or comments?
What is the fee right now?
$127.
This very program takes place at most universities throughout the state. Throughout the city of Chicago. Yeah. So a number of universities are part of this program.
I'm sorry, correction, the current fee is $113.
Is there a motion to approve?
So moved.
Second.
Trustee Joyce?
Yes.
Trustee Leak?
Yes.
Trustee Smith?
Yes.
Trustee Young?
Yes.
Trustee Sanchez?
Yes.
The motion carries. Next resolution, Larry.
The next resolution is for the fiscal year 2014 tuition and fee waiver budget. The university has done an analysis and concluded, based on work that has been brought forth by the tuition fee and waiver committee, that they would like to bring forth a resolution to have the non-discretionary waivers be made at consistent levels with the fiscal year 13 budget. So the resolution that you have in front of you is intended to accommodate just that. These dollars are dollars that are intended to speak to the benefits that that can be provided to employees, as an example, employees who decide to take classes at CSU. There's a cost associated with that, of course, and so these are the dollars that are accumulated over the course of the fiscal year time period that in essence underwrite that expense.
When you say the dollars, I understand waiver, but I don't understand how there are actual dollars associated with a waiver. If the university just says you're the child of an employee and we're going to waive your tuition, where do the dollars actually come into play?
So every class has a cost associated with taking that class. And if you are an employee of the university, then the number of credit hours for that particular class is multiplied by the credit hour fee. That gives you a number. The cumulative effect of all of that revenue, if you will, is considered to be a waiver. Right. So that's the way the calculation works. If I'm, as an example, let's say the current dollar amount is Angela is $285, the current credit hour fee? Okay, so $285 times 3 credit hours, assuming a full-time class. And so that's a figure that can be calculated on an employee by employee basis or an individual who's taking advantage of that service or that opportunity. And so the cumulative value of all of that expense, if you will, is made, and that's considered a waiver amount. It's a benefit, if you will, to the university community, to the employees of the university. That's just an example.
What was the amount last year, last fiscal year?
The non-discretionary amount last year is consistent with what we're bringing forth this year.
This is the same amount?
That's correct. Other questions?
Is there a motion to approve?
So moved.
I second.
Trustee Joyce?
Yes.
Trustee Leek?
Yes.
Trustee Smith?
Yes.
Trustee Young?
Yes.
Trustee Sanchez?
Yes.
The motion carries. We have another resolution.
Yes, sir. The next resolution I'd like to discuss is the fiscal year 2014 preliminary budget. The university is in the process of moving through their annual budget process. It's a two-step, two-stage process, if you will. We have to develop a preliminary budget that is in fact submitted to the IBHE, and it gives the opportunity for the university to continue their normal business operations in the early part of the fiscal year. Subsequent to this preliminary budget being developed by the university, there are a series of discussions which take place over the summer months, basically allowing us to finalize all of the inputs that would form the basis of our final budget. That final budget will be brought forth to the Board of Trustees' attention in the September time period during your next meeting. And so this is a preliminary budget. There is preliminary analysis that's done, which is heavily influenced by the information that is passed down from the state in the latter part of June, which basically represents the state appropriation. And so to the extent that there's any timing disconnects, which there have been historically in developing the preliminary budget because the state appropriation is not finalized, this process was established. So I have in front of you the preliminary resolution that gives the university operating funds that will be put in place for the July and August time period.
And when is the final budget due?
We will be presenting the final budget during the September board meeting.
Okay. Any questions or comments?
Move to adopt.
Second.
Trustee Joyce?
Yes.
Trustee Leek?
Yes.
Trustee Smith?
Yes.
Trustee Young?
Yes.
Trustee Sanchez?
Yes.
And the motion carries. We have one more resolution.
Yes, sir. The final resolution I have in front of the Board of Trustees is for the fiscal year 2015 budget. This, again, is an IBHE requirement, which is intended to give them an advanced look on some of the inputs that we will be looking to bring forward into the 2015 time period. Of course, this is clearly subject to review and ongoing scrutiny, but as it stands right now, the capital budget that we're bringing forward has a total value of $372.2 million. The list that you've got in front of you on Exhibit B of the packet of information that you should have at your disposal details several projects. These are in priority order, and as it stands right now, the university continues to advocate for the Westside campus, which is our number one priority. We've got a $56.1 million prioritization number associated with that. This is a byproduct of analysis that's been done by the feasibility vendor who was brought on, was put under contract back in the March time period. They are in the process of concluding their report, but based on their preliminary information that's been submitted in two phases for the Westside campus, this is a $56.1 million figure, which accommodates both of those phases. The first phase is approximately $38 million. And the difference between the two phases is really predicated on the opportunity for future growth. So they are looking to build a facility that speaks to the current need in terms of demand within the Westside community right now, but still giving us the opportunity for future growth. And so that's why they've broken their cost estimates into two phases.
Any questions or
comments? These are new buildings that are going to be built. Are these renovating existing buildings?
I think that remains to be seen. The part of the work that the feasibility vendor and other vendors that will be brought on board, that will bring the final recommendation to the university will entail, in fact, options or alternatives that are tended to speak to whether we actually build something from scratch or whether we take over an existing operation or existing building and renovate it.
I mean, I think we're all aware that a number of schools have been closing, so there may be facilities that may be modern enough to justify looking into those as well.
I would defer to the president if he wants to speak on his perspective on possibly taking over an old school.
There is a process in place, and that process includes a committee that is very much engaged in making those recommendations, and I would not want to prejudge the recommendations coming from that committee.
There's a committee that's looking at that. That's,
yes.
That's my whole.
Yes. Yes, sir.
Sticking with the capital list here, I'll draw the committee's attention to, I'm sorry, the trustees' attention to number three. We do continue to make provision for the Robinson University Center, a building which is currently impaired, but we are in the process of trying to bring that building back to life. Dollars have, in fact, been appropriated for the renovation of that building that will accommodate external improvements. We are in the process of continuing to ask the state of Illinois for dollars that are intended to improve the interior. To the extent that we do receive funding in the future, there is a significant amount of planning that's going on right now that will help the university frame up exactly how they utilize the space on a floor-by-floor basis. Beyond the capital projects, those are again just a couple quick heavy hitters. You can see some of the capital renewal projects that we've got. The first one is the electrical switchgear. Although the university has in fact received approval for the electrical switchgear from the state, we have not received all of the appropriation, which comes to $6.5 million. And so to the extent that the dollars have not been officially released in our hand, we continue to put it on the list. Finally, looking at deferred maintenance, you can see that we do have a $47.5 million deferred maintenance total. This is actually down approximately $9 million from the fiscal year 13 original budget build, suggesting that the university continues to make an ongoing commitment based on funds availability to reduce the deferred maintenance balance out of operating funds over the course of time. Are there any questions?
Now, this capital budget appropriation and all the items you have listed, does the university really realistically expect all of these items to be funded, or is this a wish list and we expect 75% to be funded, or how does this work? I mean, is this a realistic number for the university to look to receive?
Well, again, this is the way the state appropriation process plays itself out is you ask for what you want, and more often than not, you don't get everything that you ask for, nor do you necessarily get it in the time period that you ask for it, okay? So this is the university's wish list. I would be hesitant to place a probability on what the state legislature would do in terms of granting our wish list, but we continue to advocate for the things that we would like to do. We go up in front of the state legislature on an annual basis and basically plead our case, as do other Illinois state institutions. And it's a matter of, you know, what the state, how the state, you know, views our priorities relative to other institutions.
Sir, one example of that, electrical switchgear. It was a wish list, per se, that everyone had talked about for years, maybe a decade. And what happened is we kept it on our list, and the opportunity came. Two or three things happened. One is the governor came here. We had an opportunity to address the governor. Two is Fur Muscadin was able to pull together a group of lobbyists and put forth a major effort that was same time as us dealing with the governor. And I forgot the third, but then a third item happened. And all of a sudden, something that we never really thought we were going to get from the state, it got funded in January. And it was a three things, you know, happened at the same time that gave us funding that we, you know, never really thought we were going to get from the state. We were starting to set money aside and figure out how we were going to do it.
Any other questions or comments?
It may just be my experience on the board yet, but I, you know, you comment this is a priority list. So there's an item for $196 million for a science building that is number 18, but an expansion of Westside Campus is number one. It's hard for me to wrap my mind around that not being as familiar. Why would you have number one priority of a Westside Campus if you're trying to build a science building here on campus? It just seems, I'm just not familiar enough with the overall plan of this university to understand how those priorities make those numbers and why they're there. It just seems to me you would build this facility first and make sure you have adequate facilities and so forth versus a new capital program for a Westside Campus.
And a large part of that came from one of the leaders of the Senate took the initiative to identify dollars, $40 million, for a Westside Campus. So this is something that the Senate, they stated that they wanted to give us. And we didn't have the option of saying we want to take the money from the mm-hmm. Westside Campus and use it on a science building. I don't want to say what the Senate may have done, but they may have just taken the money back. It was a line item that the Senate identified. It was a Westside senator
who wanted for the,
okay.
But it seems like that, again, in the real world, in the perfect world, that's not the way you build a university, by people's pet projects that they have mm-hmm. funding for. If you're just about education, you must look at the overall and then make a priority, like you've done a priority list. Yes. It should make some sense.
Yes.
But that's the way it's working now.
This started 10 years ago when the senator, about 10 years ago, I believe, 8 or 10 years ago.
Any other questions on this resolution?
Do we have a motion to approve?
So moved.
Second.
Trustee Joyce?
Yes.
Trustee Leek?
Yes.
Trustee Smith?
Yes.
Trustee Young?
Yes.
Trustee Sanchez?
Yes.
Motion carries.
If there's no further questions, this concludes the report for administration and finance. Thank you.
We have our audit update.
Good morning, trustees, Mr. President. For the record, my name is Ken Clow. I'm the Chief Internal Auditor. This is going to be a brief overview of what's transpired since the last meeting. We have issued two draft reports. In the beginning of the month of June, we expect to have those completed relatively soon in final format. We are in the process of conducting a couple of audits, one of them being in payroll, which is now about 50 to 60% complete. We also are today, move this over here real quick. We're also finalizing our Office of Meeting and Events. We're doing an inventory control audit for them. This was at the request of management. We are completed with that audit, the field work, and we'll be presenting the draft report to the line management there this afternoon. We're also in the process of looking at athletic ticket sales, their process there. We're now probably about 25% complete with that audit. The last thing that I need to update you on is the fiscal year 14 and 15 internal audit plan. This is a requirement in regards to the Fiscal Control and Internal Auditing Act that I prepare a two-year plan every year, at least 2 years. It must be prior to June 30th reviewed with the president, which President Watson and I met yesterday to go over that and sign the appropriate documentation to ensure that we are in compliance. The audit plan will be forthcoming to Trustee Curtin for his comment as well in the next week or so. If you have any question, that basically concludes my report. It's relatively short from a short period of time frame since our last meeting.
Any questions or comments? Thank you very much.
Thank you very much.
We're now ready for the legislative and human resources report. Trustee Lee, your committee.
morning, Board of Trustees. My name is Farah Muscadin, Director of Intergovernmental Affairs. Briefly, in regards to our state and federal legislative matters, as you know, the General Assembly adjourned on May 31st. The university had a very successful legislative session. As you previously heard, we were able to obtain funding for our electrical switchgear earlier in the year. We were able to reinstate the pharmacy grant twice. We were able to reinstate the grant of $307,000 for both FY13 and FY14. And we were able to increase our state appropriation by $457,000. And so we received a slight increase as compared to other state universities. And lastly, we were able to access the funds from the 10th license, the 2% set aside that was established several years ago. Fortunately, the governor just signed our higher education budget and the budget that established our $1.6 million annual appropriation from the gaming revenues yesterday. So they are officially law. We're still waiting on two more bills to be signed. We received a upfront payment of $3 million from the 2% set aside. That bill is still awaiting signature. I anticipate it will be signed today. And we are also waiting for signature on the amendment to the Liquor Control Act. And the governor has until about the first week of August to sign that bill. So there isn't as much urgency for signature on that bill as our budget bill. So we were pleased that he signed our budget bills yesterday. And overall, the university fared very well this particular General Assembly, as opposed to in the past where the university has been cut more so than any other public institution. In regards to pensions, pensions hit another roadblock, and now the General Assembly has instituted what is called a conference committee. The conference committee met for the first time yesterday. It's composed of 10 members from both chambers, and they must reach some sort of compromise. The governor has set a deadline of the compromise of July 9th, and part of that compromise will include the cost shift, which I've discussed with the board at board meetings several times, which is basically the university picking up the employer cost of the pensions. That's a significant cost for the university, but fortunately, we were able to maintain flat funding as opposed to last year when CSU was cut about 7%, the most out of any public institution. So it is an ongoing discussion. It is a responsibility that we will have to take on, and I know that our budget office is planning in anticipation of that becoming law. Briefly, in regards to our federal legislative agenda, as you know, there is a deadline, I believe, of July 1st, or maybe the 5th, for the interest rate increase for student loans. We are traveling to DC to meet with members of our federal congressional delegation to talk about the impact of what those increase in student loans would be to our students. As you know, over 80% of our students receive some sort of financial aid. So this is crucial, and it will have a negative impact in terms of the significant increased rates that may arise if a compromise is not reached in DC. We continue to work with Metro. That is one of our top priorities. I believe I reported that they set aside approximately $800,000 for the design for the Metro stop. So we're working with them to move that project along. We discuss, right now they're in the planning and design stage. An RFP has gone out for an architect to start the planning. But we still have to do our due diligence to ensure that they apply for the federal grant that is available to fund the program and to ensure that we obtain any funding from partners that express the same interest in transforming that station that we have. It, again, is a work in progress, but we are doing what we can with our federal lobbyists. If there are any questions, that concludes my report.
I'd just like to make a comment that the university really, really did well this year in Springfield, as opposed to last year when the university actually took a beating in Springfield. And the main difference between last year and this year has been Farah. and I think she really needs to be commended for the wonderful job she's doing in Springfield.
Thank you, Chairman.
We'll have our student trustee report.
Just to go over some highlights, the current student government members are working on amending and revising the SGA Constitution. The Department of Student Activities has scheduled a date for the Student Leadership Retreat, which will take place August 24th. We will cover with all clubs and organizations the topics of policy reviews, efficiency, and the increase of campus participation. The Latino Resource Center successfully ended the year, celebrating their 25th year anniversary, and they are proud to announce that there has been a major increase in the student participation, as well as the increase in the resources provided to the CSU students this past academic school year. The numbers are actually doubling as the academic school year advances, and they are in the midst of planning the events to celebrate Hispanic Heritage Month. As far as the African American Male Resource Center, they've had a busy year. They have worked in collaboration with the American Cancer Society, which hosted 800 students at the Positive Music Save My Life event to help promote healthy choices and positive changes amongst the youth community. This past month, they took part in the 100 Positive Black Men Reading Program, which was a joint force between the African American Male Resource Center and the Department of Athletics, where our CSU students, which included our CSU athletes, served as mentors at D.S. Wentworth Elementary School. The African American Male Resource Center will also be active participants in the Thurgood Marshall Summer Program that will be held on our CSU campus this summer. And at about a week ago, the African American Male Resource Center participated in the Juneteenth celebration in the Inglewood community, at which our very own Brother Kwesi was guest speaker. The African American Male Resource Center will also be participating in the State of Black Chicago Saving Our Children Congress. And that shall conclude my report.
Thank you very much. Any questions or comments? At this time, I entertain a motion to recess into executive session.
I move. Second.
Trustee Joyce?
Yes.
Trustee Leek?
Yes.
Trustee Smith?
Yes.
Trustee Young?
Yes.
Trustee Sanchez?
Yes.